Blog Talk Radio.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. All three engines up and burning. 2, 1, 0, and lift off.
Coach on Fire Radio.
I am the time.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Mindset Mastery, because it's all in your head. I'm really excited about tonight's show. We have someone that is, making music her way, Avion Blackstone. She's affectionately called the Dark Pop Princess, and she's bringing her own unique sound to music. Not only does she play the piano, she writes her own songs and challenges the status quo. She also fiercely loves her fans, who she calls affectionately the Aviants, and she cares deeply about people being able to express themselves freely. She's open about her struggles with mood disorders and her drive to be a mega music star. And through all of her work to bring fresh music to her fans, she's maintained a positive mindset and beautiful spirit. Not to mention that she has over 120,000 plays from her music on Spotify and over 35,000 followers on Twitter. Not bad for an independent artist. You can find all of her information on social media at Avion Blackstone, so A-V-I-O-N Blackstone. She's on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook under that name, and I really just can't wait to jump in with her. For those of you listening in at the beginning of this show, I'm really excited about the lineup for the next few weeks. I will be sharing that probably in the next episode. I have a lot of really exciting guests. We're just finalizing the schedule for some of them. And we're really going to delve into some of this mindset. And as you can see, I'm trying to bring in guests that are from different facets and who work in different areas, because really, if we don't have the right mindset, we don't get ahead in any area. So without further ado, I'm going to bring Avion on the line, and we're going to spend the better part of our time together with her. Hi, Avion. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Hi.
Hi. Well, welcome to the show. I'm so happy you're here with us today.
Well, thank you. I'm thrilled to be here. This was a fascinating show concept when you talked to me about it, so I'm really excited.
Yeah, no, I think it's great. And, you know, when I came up with the idea for this kind of show, I absolutely, you know, although I talk to a lot of coaches and people in the coaching industry, I also wanted to save room for people like you that work in different industries and how mindset is, you know, impacted, whether it's positive or negative, or, you know, what you have to go through, because there's people that from all around that can really benefit from the lessons of other people. So welcome.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you so much. I'm very flattered to be here.
But. Well, that's great. So I have shared on, my social media the link to your song, Black Ice. It's one of my favorites. I happen to be a big fan of all your music, but Black Ice is one of my favorites. I did a bit of an intro on who you are, but tell us from your perspective, you know, what brought you to where you are today?
Oh, goodness, that's kind of, to me, that always feels like a question, like, that, like, how did the world get to be how it is? You know, it seems like so complex.
Yeah.
I think I would have to say that one of the things I very firmly believe is that every individual human being has a life purpose and a life calling, and there's, you know, we don't just show up on this planet randomly and have, you know, no game plan. We do have something we came here to do. And I think for me, that was supposed to be music and reaching out to people through music. So that was always kind of the drive, the motivator that pushed me. And the crazy twists and turns in the road that got me to where I am now, I mean, if I were to even try to start covering them, it's such a long, complicated story, and I could never have predicted that I was going to end up in Austin, Texas, with 35,000 fans, with all the success on Spotify. I couldn't have told you that was how it was going to go when I started. And there were certainly times when it looked like that was not how it was going at all. But it's been a beautiful journey to walk along and to be able to accept the process slowly. And now I'm really grateful to be where I'm at, honestly.
Yeah, no, that's really great. And that is a question that some would have. Like, when you know, it's certainly in the music industry, I imagine, it's not easy to start unless you have a big bankroll or you know a lot of people on the inside. How did you get to 35,000 fans? And, you know, watching your Twitter feed, it's obviously really active and you interact a lot with them. So how did you get to 35,000 fans?
Well, this is one of those things, it always sounds so much more complicated than it is. I, honest to God, got there by being nice to people, by following them and saying, hey, how you doing? Tell me a little bit about you. By the way, I sing. Here's my music. What do you think? Give me your opinion. And what you find is that when you're open with people and you reach out to them, 99% of people are more than willing to kind of make that jump with you and go ahead and get to know you and be friendly and in return. And that's really what I discovered was I would go online, and I still do this every day, and I would find people who were following artists and authors and other people that I admire that I connected with, and I would follow those people because I figured, you know, if we both admire the same person, then we've got some common ground, and they would follow me back, and then I would say hello, and then there would be a conversation, and the next thing you know, you've got a new friend. And it sounds overly simplistic, but that really is the gist of it. That is how I got to that amount of following.
Well, that's really great. And that's one of the things that I know people starting out in business and really just starting out on social media, period, often wonder, like, what are the complicated things? Do I have to buy followers? What do I do to get to the big numbers? But you really just boiled it down and made it pretty easy. Do you find it hard to maintain? Because that must be a lot of work.
Well, I'm not going to lie. It is a lot of work. It is work. It's not, I would say there's, if you want to do anything in your life well, you're going to put in a certain amount of energy. It's, you know, kind of one of the laws of the universe, energy in equals energy out. And if you want a $1 million response, you're going to have to put in a $1 million effort. But at the same time, it's something that I really enjoy doing. And it does take dedication. It does take setting aside some time every day to go and to connect with people and to listen to people. And it also, I think, takes a little bit of a mindset of not taking things personally, because when you start interacting with so many different human beings, you start running across a lot of different perspectives that are going to be very different from your own, a lot of different life experiences that are going to conflict with yours. So that has been one of the things that was challenging for me, was to be able to always look at the people I was connecting with and say, how do I understand them where they're at? How do I reach out and connect with them in a way that is going to make sense for their situation and not expect them to alter themselves for me? So it's definitely a huge amount of work to keep up with, but it's fun to do. It's wonderfully, wonderfully fun.
That's awesome. So let's talk about that a little bit more. You reach to them. How, you know, that seems like such a simple concept, but yet with, you know, people, like you said, there's so many different people, and I'm sure you're dealing with people in different countries. When you're talking to someone that has a different mindset or a different view than you, how do you maintain that objectivity?
Well, the first thing that I would say helps me is to always remember that it's not about you. I mean, even if you have someone getting in your face, insulting you personally, it's still not about you. It's about their perception, their emotions, their past experience, the situation that they are dealing with in that moment. And as I told one of my friends, I said, when someone judges you, it doesn't really tell you anything about yourself, but it tells you a lot about them. Mm-hmm. And if you keep that in mind, that no matter what people say, they are giving you information about themselves, about their human experience, about their emotions, and you keep that in your mind's eye, then it becomes much easier to not feel hurt or offended or taken aback or shocked by anything that people do. I remember that one of the things I used to have trouble with was I would have people who were very sexually aggressive towards me. And, you know, it's the internet, and I'm a girl, and that happens. But one of the things that I found was when I started looking at it, realizing that a lot of times these individuals literally did not have any other ideas about how to interact with women. it really changed my perspective on it. And those interactions, instead of becoming frightening and threatening or confrontational, they suddenly became about getting to the human being behind the inappropriate picture or the inappropriate comment. And suddenly you would find yourself, instead of this so quote-unquote pervert talking to you, you'd find yourself having a conversation about somebody's life and somebody's dreams and hopes and interests, and it developed in a completely different direction because I did not take it personally. So that's really the biggest thing. It's just, it's never about you. That's the thing you've got to remember.
Yeah, that's really great. And I really like the idea that, you know, you're talking to the human, not, you know, not what they're coming forward with. And I think that can be really tough for someone who hasn't done it before. So I think that you're giving some really good tips here. If you say to yourself, this is not personal, what is behind it? It allows you to look at the situation in a different way. It's kind of like if we're looking at problems, instead of seeing the problems, we say, okay, what is the opportunity here? What is the gift in this problem I should be learning? And it kind of just changes our mindset and our view of that. So it's really interesting. Also, it reminded me of the quote from, I'm pretty sure it's Anthony Hopkins. I could have it wrong. But, you know, the actor who said, you know, really, your opinion is none of my business. Your opinion of me is none of my business. I really like that. So it's the same idea. You know, what someone else thinks of us is really not, you know, it's not a reflection of us at all. It's a reflection of their view of us.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
Yeah.
You can never express your opinion about anything without revealing a piece of yourself. And when someone shows themselves to you, even if they didn't intend to, that is also a gift. That is a connection of their soul to yours. Even if they don't intend it to be that way, it still is that. And so to approach that with respect and honor, even if they're not expressing themselves in a respectful way, often opens up doors that you didn't even realize were there.
Mm, yeah, I love that. So when you're working away at your music, and I know that you write your own music or write your own songs and you do a lot of the composition and everything else, I know that you're a piano player as well. And, you know, this is a cliche question, really, but where is the source of the lyrics? Where does that come from?
Everywhere. I really consider myself in a lot of ways more of a storyteller than a songwriter, because mm-hmm. every song has some story or some idea behind it. And there's a lot of times I feel like in my head there's enough material to write a novel on the story or the subject of the song. Black Ice in particular talks about being in a relationship that is essentially two people manipulating each other. And they're both trying so desperately to get out of this relationship their needs. But what they're resulting in, because they're approaching it from a place of manipulation and not a place of genuine compatibility and love, they're getting hurt and broken down, gradually kind of eaten alive by this bad connection. And that was built out of very real stories from people that I knew, from situations in my own life. It was a genuine, real story that happened. But that's just one example. I have a new song right now coming out, hopefully here soon when I get myself satisfied with it, because I have the flaw of perfectionism and I'm working on that. But the story behind the song Dancing with Superman, there was a moment in my life where I was really struggling severely with some major health issues. And I had two people who cared about me very much sit me down, and I look back on it now, and I know they were trying to intervene, and I know they were trying to help me and save me and draw me out of a very destructive situation. But at the time, it felt very judgmental and like they were not being supportive to me. And Dancing with Superman kind of came out of that, with the idea of this health issue, this problem I was working through being Superman, and saying all of the things that I get out of this are so incredible compared to reality. Why is it that I have to come back down to earth and be normal? Why would you expect me to do this? And so it's a little bit of a messed up song, But one of the things that I love about being a storyteller is that I'm allowed to write like that. You know, you can talk about the positive and the overcoming, and you can also talk about the struggle and what you did and how you came through it and how you felt in the moment.
Yeah, I really love that. And I think the best, really the best songs, well, for me anyhow, you know, yes, it has to have great music, but the best songs really capture me with the lyrics and the story that's behind it. And I can, you know, often find myself learning the lyrics because I can relate to a story in my life that it comes from. So I'm sure that, mm-hmm. you know, people listening will relate in the same way to Black Ice. So with that, actually, I'm going to play Black Ice right now because I really think it's a great song, and it also will set up the rest of our talk together. So just hang on the line while I play that. It's three beautiful minutes of music that you won't regret listening to. So just 1 second, we'll be back here. Welcome back. Thank you very much for that beautiful song, Black Ice. Like I said, it's one of my favorites. And actually, I have 4 kids here, and they're regularly playing that and your other songs that you have on Spotify. They each have their own account now, so it's really fun to see what they play. So, yeah. So before we played that great song, you were talking about Dances with Superman, and I really love the name of that song. You'll have to send it to me when it's released, and I'll play it on my show for sure. So you said that you mentioned you had some friends that were intervening on a health issue that you had. Do you want to share about what that was and how you were able to come from that?
Well, you know, this has kind of been one of those things that I've always thought, how much should I share and how much should I not? And it's always interesting to try to find a balance between being honest and vulnerable and yet not glorifying something. Because I feel like I hear too many interviews where people talk about something they went through and they make it sound like it was actually really a very good thing. And, you know, so it's been a challenge to talk about for that reason. But that particular situation, my friends were intervening in a situation where I had very severe troubles with eating disorders. I'm 5'7". I had gotten down to 111 pounds. I was very, very, very thin, very weak, very sickly, not able to function very well. And on top of that, because of just the issues that are, you know, that I deal with in my own life and my own physicality, I had a very severe depression and anxiety. So it was kind of like all of those things kind of weighing down on top of me. And I think the eating disorder was partially a coping mechanism, but in another sense, I was kind of using it the same way that people will use substance abuse as an escape. It was like instead of dealing with the things that hurt me or bothered me, I could turn to this and say, well, all of my problems are because I'm too fat. And that's really absurd when you start looking at it. You know, if you're angry with someone or if you haven't been able to speak your heart to someone or if you're discouraged about something, how much you did or did not eat for breakfast has no correlation. You know, there's no connection there at all. But when you're afraid to deal with whatever it is that's hurting you or bothering you or to face down that discouragement, then you'll start looking for something, anything to blame for the way that you're feeling and to try and find a solution that does not involve you actually being courageous and facing up to the things that hurt you. So that was the situation that I was in. And I, you know, I look back on it now and I do see that I was lucky. I was lucky to have those people in my life. I was lucky to have them caring about me and loving me and willing to sacrifice for me. And, you know, one of them to this day is still my very, very best friend. And the other one taught me a lot of things about myself and about how I needed to behave and how I needed to see the world. So they're both wonderful gifts in my life. But Dancing with Superman kind of deals with the emotions I was experiencing in that moment. They talk about intervention in anything as it is a little bit of a tipping point. There has to be a moment when the person you are reaching out to has said in their own spirit, this is no longer working for me, I need something else. They have to have reached that point. And once they get to that tipping point, then the intervention is something they can reach out to you and say, yes, please help me. I don't know how to change this, but give me some tools. I will work with you. I simply hadn't reached that tipping point. I was at a place where I still thought that starving myself half to death or throwing up everything I ate was going to fix my problems. I would say it probably took me another full year after that to get to the place where I realized that nothing in my life was going to get better because of that disorder. Nothing was going to improve. It was going to cost me my health. It was going to cost me my music. It was going to cost me my relationships. And it was not contributing anything to my life. Once I hit that tipping point, though, I was able to remember that those people loved me enough to stand up and intervene, and I was able to reach out, especially to my best friend, and get some support. So two things I would take away from that. One is when you are the person who is struggling with something that is destructive, do sit down with yourself and ask, is this really solving the problems that I'm trying to use it for? You know, am I actually fixing anything with this, or am I just putting a Band-Aid on it? Because if you've got a broken bone, a Band-Aid is not going to help. Doesn't matter how pretty it is, doesn't matter how much you like it, doesn't matter how expensive it is, it's just simply not going to help. But to those who do have loved ones going through a major struggle, whether that's an eating disorder or a mental illness or an addiction, do understand that just because you reach out to intervene and they reject you does not mean that they're not going to need and want your help in the future. they may not be ready to take that help, and you may have to step back and separate yourself from their situation until they are ready to take that help. But just the simple fact that you are willing to make yourself vulnerable like that and say, I'm going to risk you thinking badly of me. I'm going to risk you thinking I'm judging you. I'm going to risk losing you as a friend or a lover. I'm going to help. Just making that simple step forward may be the difference between whether or not they get help down the road. So it's worth making the effort and not feeling discouraged, even if they turn you down, because doing it may be the very thing that saves their life.
That's a beautiful story. Thank you for sharing that with us. And I think that it's, you know, this is something that is prevalent, you know, I think more and more so than it used to be, especially with, you know, girls, but I know that there's a lot of boys now that are experiencing this as well, you know, peer pressure, whatever it is, and also burying, having to push down all the feelings that, you know, I don't feel normal or I'm being bullied or, you know, whatever it can stem from. So it's really great that, you know, even though you weren't ready for the help, you still able to tap back to that when it was time for you to ask for that help. So that's really great for people to know that if they're experiencing this with someone in their life, that still do try to intervene or reach out. If you're not accepted at that point, they might remember you down the line. I'm just going to mention the phone number in case anyone's on the line that wants to call in and ask Avion Blackstone any great questions. The number is 646-716-7979. Feel free to call in. And so when you were going through this and your friends intervened, I'm sure, like you mentioned, it, you know, at the time you felt very judged and, you know, you had a hard time with what they were trying to do. What was this, you know, you mentioned there was a tipping point for you, but what has been the process or, you know, what did you do around your mindset that once you hit that tipping point, once you started getting for help, that it's kind of kept you on track? Because I know, especially with an eating disorder, depression, anxiety, there's factors that can push you back to those places.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And, you know, here's what I would say, and I'll just be straight up and honest about it. I had to admit to myself that, I mean, a lot of times I think we treat eating disorders in a really strange, separate category. It's like mental health, we've come to recognize that that is a physical illness that needs physical treatment and that people will usually need support with throughout their life. And addiction, we've come to recognize that that is a physical illness that needs physical treatment and people will deal with it throughout their life. But I really feel like we need to start looking at eating disorders more the way that we look at addictions, because I had to accept that I deal with a disease. That's what it is. It is a disease. It is something that is going to be with me for the rest of my life. And just like if I had diabetes or if I had, I mean, fill in the blank of any of a number of diseases that can stay with you for your life, I have to look at myself and care for myself appropriately. A diabetic would get up in the morning and check their sugar and would eat their diet appropriately to support their body in fighting that disease. I have to keep my mind on track. I have to remind myself to face my problems. I have to remind myself to empower both my body image and also my courage in facing other people. One of the things I found specifically that I needed to do was to stop listening to certain music. And it was kind of painful because, you know, music is definitely my first love, but there were certain songs that I found were fostering in me an attitude of escapism and the idea that I didn't have to face the things that hurt me, that I could just bury it. And I had to turn that off, and I had to walk away from that. One thing that was kind of specific for me was I had to stop eating particular types of food. And it would, you know, it was very cyclical with me. I would go between pigging out and starving myself, you know, round and round and round. And I had to put myself on the straight and narrow with things. And for a while, I had to eat very specifically and say, I'm doing this because it's nutritious, and here's all the ways that it's nutritious for me. It's going to help me with this. And the other thing I had to do was just simply remember how many people were relying on me. I take personal responsibility for the role that I play in each and every one of my fans' lives, however small that is. Rather, I am simply there to be the background music to an event in your life, or whether I am on Twitter talking to you every day, providing substantial emotional support for something you're going through, it doesn't make a difference. I still made a commitment to be there. And I can't be there if I allow this disease to kill me. So that was the thing that I had to remember. I made a commitment to people I love, to people who are very important to me, including to me, because, you know, I've got to, you know, through all of this, I've got to love me too. I made that commitment, so I have to keep myself healthy. And I think I would say to anybody who's struggling with anything of this nature, any chronic disease of any kind, it's always good to have multiple reasons to do the right thing. Because you are, you know, you can love yourself as much as you want, but you are going to have that morning when you wake up and you just don't like yourself quite enough to take care of what you need to take care of. And that's when you reach for the next thing. It's like, okay, I'm not really cool with myself. I'll work on that later today. But I did make a commitment to these people. I did promise to do this. Or I know that this other thing matters to someone else. Or I know this is the right thing to follow through with. And sometimes you just need to have that extra safety rope so that you can pull yourself through and keep going and keep your mindset on what you're trying to achieve and on why you are on this planet.
Oh, I love that. That's something, you know, regularly I tell my clients, and, you know, it's in anything related to mindset, and that is find your why and repeat it often. And, you know, a lot of the people that I've seen, they talk about, you know, wanting to stay home with their kids or the freedom to travel. That's a motivation. It's not necessarily your why. So I like that, you know, you're talking about having, you know, not just yourself to work at this for, but also your fans and other people that are relying on you for this. Something else that when you were talking, you mentioned, you know, I can just imagine how hard it is, you know, just trying to get your music career off the ground, but also for the artists that are already, that have broken through, and, you know, how it completely changes their life in a lot of ways. And, you know, what I've noticed is that a lot of stars at the beginning of their career, they're, you know, they're fitting into a mold that the music industry wants them to fit into, and then they break out on the other side. And, you know, even if you look at Nicki Minaj's last album, that was more true to what she wanted to do for music. Beyonce did the same thing. Madonna certainly has been in that the last, you know, three quarters of her career for sure. And, you know, then I think about Michael Jackson, who kind of, I felt like, didn't have that opportunity to do that. He was, you know, caught up in his own, you know, this is just my conjecture here, of course, but he was caught up in his own, you know, I would even say his own disorder, and I wouldn't say it was an eating disorder necessarily, but his own addictions, and wasn't necessarily getting that kind of support, like the friends that were saying, hey, you need to, like, take a step back here. And then on the other hand, he had the industry pushing him to fit into a mold and do a certain amount of shows and perform a certain amount to, you know, make an X amount of dollars. How do you think, you know, having gone through the struggle you did and realizing it as early, well, I wouldn't say as early because I'm not sure how long you struggled with it, but realizing it before you really broke out into mainstream, how do you think that might help you carrying it through rather than finding out this information later on or breaking through this disorder later on?
Well, you know, I think I'd have to be honest with you and say that going through this and developing this now while I'm still growing, while I'm still on the fringes of the mainstream industry, I think it's probably a survival matter for me, because I look back at myself as a younger person with all the self-doubts that I've dealt with and the struggles that I've had. And I had been put in, like, say, Michael Jackson's situation, where from the time he was a very young child, he kind of had it dictated to him, this is who you are. This is a model for who you are and what you do and how you operate. I think I would have simply died. I'm kind of surprised he survived as long as he did, to tell you the truth, because it's a broken model. It's a very broken model. This idea that you've got to be physically perfect and just stupid enough so that people think you're adorable, but brilliant enough so that you can take over the world. I mean, there's all these oxymorons that are kind of put into the image that we see of pop performers and the pressure to produce. Demi Lovato actually talked a little bit about that in an interview. She she had to delegate eventually everything in her life to a personal assistant and said, do not tell me anything that I am doing more than 24 hours in advance, because she could not handle the anxiety about trying to figure out if she was measuring up and fitting in. And she had to have someone manage that flow of information and data for her and the pressure. So I think for me, I've kind of been allowed to grow. It's like I'm, I guess you could say it's like I'm growing my spine while I've been developing out here without that pressure being there to prevent me from getting that strength together. On the one hand, I think it will probably make me more successful as I break further into mainstream. On the other hand, I think it's probably going to make me a pain in the butt to work with, because I'm definitely not as cooperative or as pliable as I would have been if I was more inexperienced and more lacking in that confidence in myself.
But that, you know, in one way, the industry could see that as, you know, you're more solid then. You're not going to come in and then fall apart. You've already kind of done the growth you needed to grow through. Not to say you won't be faced with more challenges, but that you've, you know, come through an incredible experience already, and you've been able to kind of turn that around for yourself without having the pressure of that on you. So, you know, it's funny when you talk about the pop industry and, you know, the pressure that there is with that. I know that, you know, Adele was told once you should lose weight, and she goes, I make music for ears, not eyes. You know, I love that quote from her. And then, you know, more recently, Meghan Trainor was like, you know, this is what I look like. I'm not losing weight. And she's, you know, come up with quite a few songs that have videos to go along with it. And I think, you know, that is refreshing, especially from a woman's perspective. I know that the guys face this issue as well, but it's really nice to see. And, you know, with three daughters, I like to see that as well, that there's, you know, regular bodies, regular attitudes, and, you know, some strength behind a woman coming out in what she has to say. So that's really great. What would you say to your fans who want to do something that seems really far away and really big, like you want to break out into mainstream music and be really, really successful? How do they jump into that without being discouraged right off the bat?
Well, there's two things I would say there. The very first one is, in order to succeed at anything, you simply have to make it in your own mind that failure is not an option. Now, that's not the same as saying, if I fail, then, you know, I'm going to jump off a bridge or something dramatic like that. No. It is simply telling yourself that no matter what, no matter how hard, no matter how long, no matter what it costs, no matter what I have to do, I am going to do this. Even if I have to start from scratch 1,000 times, I am going to do this. If I don't get my record deal until I'm 99 years old, I'm still going to get one. You know, like, you have to set that in your mind. It has to be that intense stubbornness that you're not going to let go of it for any reason. That's the first thing. The second thing I would say, always remember that knowledge is power. And if you don't know how to do something, you can learn. The 9 times out of 10, the only thing separating you from success is the right book. And the other one time, it's going to be the right person instead of the right book. So make that your goal, is to learn as much as you can. Ask questions. Ask questions until people think you are irritating as hell. Read books until you are sick of reading books. Read articles, then go back and read more books. Fill your head with as many resources as you can and cross-check them. You know, try things out and say, okay, that worked for me, that didn't work for me. I'm going to keep trying what works. I'm going to throw out what didn't work. Make notes and pass your knowledge and information on to other people, because they will very often trade you something else that they learned, and you'll both be better for the interaction. On the practical level, for people wanting to get started, especially in music, I would say the very, very first thing that you need to do is get yourself a very clear vision of who you want to be as an artist and what you want to do. That actually was something I did wrong, by the way. I had to kind of let myself evolve and change, and I've done a lot of different things as I grew. But get a very clear idea of who you want to be and what you want to say, what your message to the world is, and then get a song. It doesn't have to be multiple songs. It doesn't have to be an album, just a song for musicians, or for authors it would be a book, or for artists it would be that one piece of art. You need to get something that is quintessentially lined up with who you are and what you want to say. And then you just go and you be friendly. And you say, hey, my name is fill in the blank. I do this particular thing of art. Check it out. Give me your opinion. People love to give their opinion. People love to give their opinion. And again, remember, it always tells you something about them. It doesn't necessarily say anything at all about you. But it opens up that door for communication. And the next thing you know, these people go from being strangers to being acquaintances, to being friends, to being fans, to being some of the biggest promoters and supporters that you've ever seen in your life.
I love that. That's really beautiful. And the other thing is, you know, I like the idea that, you know, take one thing and, you know, go be friendly. I know that from anyone who has a product or, you know, is a song in your case, artwork, whatever it is, when you're putting that out there, you might be sick of putting it out there because it's your product and you've seen it for 6 months already, but there's 7 billion people in the world. It's not possible mm-hmm. you've reached 7 billion people already. So the idea that, you know, you keep putting it out there because you just never know, the next person that listens to it might be the person that needed to hear it for whatever reason, to either get you a record contract or to just be sued by that song, for example.
Yep. Yep. Exactly. There was a gentleman who told me one time, I told him I thought I needed a new song. I said, I think my song is getting boring. I need a new song. And he said, why do you need a new song? I said, well, everybody's kind of heard it already and they're kind of bored with it and I think I just need to get something new. And he looked at me and he said, really? Every person on the whole planet has heard your song? I said, well, I guess not, actually. Never mind. I'll get back to work.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I think Rihanna's first song, I think she had been working on it for like 18 months before it actually broke out over her overnight success, something like that. Maybe it's not her, but there is one of the bigger artists that was exactly the case. Something else you mentioned when you were talking about, you know, get the right book, get the right person, talk to people, expand, you know, I really like that because that's something that, you know, with my clients or anybody else that I talk to, keep expanding your awareness because, you know, especially now, you know, I'll read a book and it'll talk about 5 other books in that book. So then I have another list. I'll read one and 5 more pop up. But I also have been starting to read biographies and autobiographies and looking up interviews with people that I admire in the direction that I want my career to go in. Is that something that you find yourself doing with, you know, musicians or artists that, you know, have a similar story or even just music that you really like? Do you find yourself doing the same thing?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I would say I'm almost obsessed with it to a certain extent. Learning people's stories is incredibly valuable for anything you want to do because it's kind of like it reveals the path to you. It starts to show you the decisions that they made and the connections that they made that allowed them to move forward step by step on their journey. And I would also say one of the biggest things that I've learned is don't limit it just to your own field of expertise. If you want to be a world-class author, then yes, you should read biographies and stories about world-class authors, but you should also read about entrepreneurs and philosophers and people who have had a reach that is in any way related to what you are doing. You need to know the stories of those people because it's going to reveal to you truths about humanity and about the pathways that we walk to get where we want to go. Sometimes there's kind of this strange perception that success is difficult. And it's really not. It is not hard to be successful. And another maybe more earthy way of putting that would be is you are going to work just as hard in your life whether you are successful or not.
Yeah, I really like that.
Yeah, it's just you might as well put the effort towards something that's going to bring you success. Because you're not getting out of the work. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I think that's really key. You know, it's certainly something that I had to get over personally before I even came close to doing the career I'm doing now. But just even when I started my business, you know, this idea that, because I came from a upbringing that everything you get, you work hard for. Nothing comes easy. If you want a lot of money, you have to work a lot. And I had to kind of get over that. I didn't mind hard work. And when things started to happen, when I got into the mindset that I could just let things happen and be open to the possibilities, I found myself tripping up because it wasn't that hard. It was, you know, this is something I love doing. I love talking about mindset. In fact, I realized I'd been doing it most of my life and helping people in a certain way with this. And then when I started doing it and, you know, making money from it, but really beyond that, making connections with it, I was like, geez, you know, this is really not, this shouldn't be this easy. Why is it this easy? So I love that you mentioned that, because success does not have to be difficult. And often it's just the mindset we have and the limiting beliefs we have that make us think it's difficult. The other thing I would add to that also is our ego. Our ego can sneak up on us and, you know, make us think, oh, no, that's different. That's out there. You shouldn't be doing that at all. And here's all the reasons why. When, in fact, it's just because it's different. We, you know, we just never have attempted it before. When have you had to battle your ego and kind of come up against that?
Oh goodness. Ego is definitely one that I struggle with. And ego takes different shapes. One of the things I think we have to remember, especially in I would call it the manifestation or the law of attraction circles, there tends to be this very negative attitude toward ego. And we have to remember that ego is not a bad thing. Ego is actually there to protect us. That is a legitimate function of our ego. It's supposed to give us a sense of where we begin and others stop and vice versa. Sometimes what we have to remember about it is that it is going to take different shapes, not necessarily to stop us from doing things, but to challenge us. And my belief about my own ego is that when I run into something that I am afraid of and I start looking at it and it turns out, oh, I'm just afraid of being judged, or I'm afraid for absolutely no reason whatsoever, or, you know, fill in the blank, whatever it comes up as, I have to recognize that my ego is trying to make sure that I really want whatever it is that I'm pursuing. A lot of times, things that we really, truly desire are going to have the strongest negative response from our ego. One of the things that was hardest for me was just simply telling people about my music. Because, you know, I live in Austin, Texas. Musicians are the proverbial dime a dozen here. I mean, you literally cannot throw a stone in Austin without hitting someone who is in some way connected to music. And that makes Austin very awesome, but it also means that everybody's kind of heard it before. And
right.
I was so afraid of being judged as just one more irritating whatever. But I had to realize that my ego was challenging me to say, how much energy are you willing to put behind this? Because if you can put enough energy behind this to get past me, then you have enough energy to get what you want. And if you can't get past me, then you're not going to get what you want. So we have to look at our ego sometimes that way, too, and see it as kind of a gatekeeper, not necessarily something that's actually stopping us. It's just kind of like the Sphinx that's going to ask us some riddles. Say, how badly do you want this? Do you really, really have the energy to power through this, or are you just kidding?
Yeah.
And that's how I look at it.
Yeah, no, that's really great. That's a really great perspective. When, you know, I think back of all, you know, I've done a lot of reading around mindset and, you know, books dating published in 1950s, maybe even earlier than that. And every single book talks about the fact that, you know, this is something that the closer you get to your highest self and what you, your purpose here, your passion and whatever that is, the easier it can become if we allow it to be so. And, you know, it's something that people often get tripped up on. You know, I certainly did. Well, this is easy, then why should we do it? In your case, how did you know that this was it? Like, music was your calling and storytelling, really, because it's not just about the music. It's the stories that you bring along with it.
You know, I will say that I think my experience is going to be personal to me, but I mean, I'll share it for the benefit of anyone else walking a similar path. For me, I think there was simply never anything else that I wanted to do. I literally feel like I was born wanting to be a musician. I never had any other ambition. Now, you know, you go through the childhood dreams of, you know, you have the infatuation of the moment. There were times when I wanted to be a doctor, but I wanted to be a singing doctor. Or when I wanted to be a nun, but I wanted to be a singing nun. You know, at one point, I wanted to be a singing Jedi. You know, so it should kind of give you a perspective. The common theme was always that I loved music and that I, not just that I wanted to sit at home and make music, but that I wanted to share music with people. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the difference between someone who is called to be a singer and someone who is maybe called to be a composer or a producer. My love is not just for the music itself, but for connecting human beings through music. And I can't imagine doing anything else. Like, people ask me, what would you do if you couldn't do that? And my mind goes blank. I have no idea. I have no idea what I would do.
I love that. So, you know, as tough as it's been, you know, with the health scares and the health issues that you had, what keeps you going now? Like, it's been, you know, I think a little over a year, right, since you've released Black Ice. So what keeps you going? I know that you have a good fan base, but what else keeps you motivated to keep pushing through? And I can't imagine, you know, the music industry just seems really hard to break out in, but then when it happens all kind of in a rush, or that's what it seems like. What keeps you going?
I think it's mostly a combination of hope and stubbornness.
Love it.
It's been very helpful to me, especially in the face of depression and eating disorders and all of that, to simply look at those things and say, I am not going to let you kill me. I am too stubborn to die, and I'm too stubborn to quit. And, you know, it's full of oppositional defiance. It's like, I am going to do this because you said I couldn't. It might not even have occurred to me to do it if you hadn't said something, but now that you've told me I can't, I am going to do it.
And I love that.
That keeps me going, yes.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's really great.
I have struggled with eating disorders since I was 4 years old. I mean, that's kind of terrible to realize. The first time I ever remember putting myself on a diet, I was 4.
Wow.
And that's really pretty awful. I know for sure that I definitely would have qualified for being diagnosed with an eating disorder at the age of 12. And that means that I am officially 11 years past the point of diagnosis. Most people who are diagnosed with an eating disorder are dead within 10 years or less from complications directly related to the eating disorder. I mean, you can look that up. It's on the CDC website. It's like very official medical fact. 10 years is the life expectancy for someone with an eating disorder. I'm at 11, and I remind myself of that every day. I'm still here. I'm still alive, and I'm not quitting anytime soon. And that doesn't mean I'm not going to have bad days. You know, I will have bad days. And I think preparing myself for that and saying I know what to do when I have a bad day is very important in being able to stay healthy and go forward.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. We've just over 3 minutes left, and I feel like this time has flown by. There's so much more that we could cover, I'm sure. So tell your fans, or tell the new fans, because, you know, I have a different listener base probably than what you sometimes have, which is always great because then you get to have new fans to your music. Where is the best place to find you? I mentioned it at the beginning of the show, but I want to make sure people catch on to that.
Well, I am all over Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. The best place to communicate with me is going to be Twitter. That's where I talk to people the most. I know for some of your listeners especially, it's probably going to be more convenient to follow my Facebook page. I am Avion Blackstone everywhere. It's just A-V-I-O-N Blackstone. You just find me anywhere on the internet. That's me. And if you say hi to me, mention this show, I'll be more than happy to say hello. I'd love to meet you. And please, please definitely feel free to send me commentary and thoughts and let me know what your opinions and your reactions to everything that's been said here today. I know some of what we covered is probably going to be very encouraging, but also potentially very triggering for people. And so I do want to let everybody know that if that brings something up in your own spirit, I will definitely make an effort to be there for you to listen and to share. Oh.
Yeah, I love that. That's really beautiful. And I know from following your Twitter feed that you have a little cat called Egypt. Is that right?
Yes, I do.
And I've seen, and it's a boy, right? Is that correct?
Yes, Egypt is a boy. He's my little rescue baby.
Oh, that's awesome. I've seen some of his pictures, actually. I think I've seen them on Instagram, maybe even Facebook. He's really quite cute. So, you know, as we close out, we still have a couple minutes, but a last thought or something you'd like to leave the listeners with about you, your music, or just life in general?
I would say to everybody, you're worth it. You're worth it. You are worth beating. You're worth beating that demon. You're worth climbing that mountain. You're worth forgiving that person and letting go of the past. You're worth trying things that you never thought you were going to succeed at. You are worth it. You are worth the investment in yourself. And the more that you invest in yourself, the more that you show yourself that you believe in your own worth, the more you will see other people in your life following your lead. No one is going to treat you like the queen of your own life or the king until you do. And once you start doing that with that power, then you are going to start seeing the love and the generosity and the outflowing for other people.
I love that. That I couldn't have thought of a better way to end this interview. That's absolutely fantastic. I will be hashtagging that, by the way, and tagging you in it. I really love this interview. Thank you so much for your time. I'm going to be sure when you have Dances with Superman out, I will definitely put up the links and send it to my mailing list and whoever else I can have listen to it for sure. So thank you, Avion. I really appreciated this time, and we will talk again soon, I'm sure.
All righty. Thank you so much. It was a blessing to be here. You have a good night.
You too. Thank you. Well, that was another great interview with a fantastic guest. I have to tell you that I cannot wait to have my guests on every week. They're always bringing such value, and I really loved the time with Avion. She has been, you know, a true, you know, just a bright light in my life. I came across her music probably 18 months ago. I might be maybe a little bit, maybe not that long ago. I can't even remember. I just know that I heard her music. It was through Twitter, actually. I'm pretty sure she reached out to me. And I just fell in love as soon as that happened. And I'm, you know, I've been following her career ever since and supporting any way I could. So, you know, please do follow her social media, share her music. You know, if you really do believe in supporting great people and great work, please do support her music and share the links. Go on Spotify, press play, because, you know, that helps. Every number counts when you're in the music industry. Any play you can get is really great. And also, as you can tell from our interview, she's a beautiful spirit and has a lot to share with the world. So why not put someone like that out there that has a message to share and is so beautiful in doing it? So as Avion mentioned, I'm closing out the show with You Are Worth It. And, you know, keep that in mind as you go through your day. I will be back in 2 weeks with another guest. I can't wait to reveal who that's going to be in the coming time. Until then, you know, enjoy your day and be sure to look up my guest and follow me on social media, Delora Guignon, D-E-L-O-R-A-G-U-I-G-N-I-O-N, and we will talk again soon.